Wait, I'm not sure what to do now, Endeavor.
Okay, does it say that we're live? No, it doesn't. Oh, it looks like we are. Yep, it looks like we're live on YouTube now. Yep, we're on.
All right. I don't hear the YouTube video, but all right. Are we can the chat hear me now?
Yes, they can. They say that we're live.
All right. So we've had a few technical difficulties there, everybody. Why are we waiting? So there's been a few technical difficulties, but we are up and running. We are ready. We're live. There's people there. All right. Thank God for that. So we're here to discuss Dirty Harry, the classic so-called vigilante movie. And it doesn't need that much of an introduction as the other ones, I don't think, Endeavor?
No, it's a pretty well-known film, I think. Not that complex of a plot. And it's a classic. Everyone knows Clint Eastwood from this film. And the "Are you feeling lucky? Well, are you punk?" Classic lines. Classic movie.
Yeah, so if I don't know what's going on with the I think the other video, the other YouTube thing still seems to be up. I'm just going to go on. I don't know what's happening. So I've wrote down some notes. I think that everybody, pretty much everybody, knows the gist of Dirty Harry, where he's hunting down a psycho killer. It's not that complicated. He's hunting down a psycho killer in San Francisco, and he finds that the bureaucracy is in his way all of the time.
Yeah, so it definitely is a film about criminal justice and about the law and about upholding order, and it has a lot to say about, you know, the liberal mindset and how that at least in the case of Dirty Harry often essentially lets evil get away and prevents order and justice from actually prevailing. And I think that there's a lot to get into with the setting, with the time it was released, with the character of Harry, and I also with the way that a lot of people have reacted to it. You know, we have a lot of good articles that a lot of liberals have written about this movie, because a lot of them hate it.
Yeah. So I'm going to give a few people just a couple of minutes to file in because I've made a complete bollocks of this. I don't know. It didn't link up on StreamYard. So Jake's and that is in the chat there sorting this out for me, because I'm just a complete I just find the live streaming to be a nightmare these days, to be honest. But so one of the first things to get into is, It's what it's famous for, really, is that it's a complete snub towards the liberal approach to police work. This is what everybody's going to expect straight away from Dirty Harry when you get into the discussion. And it's also, what I thought was interesting, is that it is in San Francisco, which used to be this just a few years. So Dirty Harry is 1971, and it's... just a few years ago, it would have San Francisco. Well, it still would have been like this liberal paradise, this utopia. So, except for everything else that we're going to go into, it was the fact that San Francisco is portrayed as this complete dump. And it's actually surprising when you look at the director as well, which is Don Siegel, who's, you know, his early life and his background on Wikipedia. It may surprise you that he'd come out with a movie as right-wing as this. But as far as, let's say, his fellows, they absolutely despised this movie. They really hated it.
Yeah, I'd say that the character of Harry, the best way to sum him up is that he's a cold-blooded force of order. You know, he's a hard-nosed cop, old-school cop in post-counterculture revolution San Francisco. And I'd say that he's very Hobbesian. He's kind of a Hobbesian man in a Rousseauian world. And, you know, he's definitely known for his character is just known for being savage and absolutely ruthless. But I do think that ultimately, at least my interpretation of the film, is that Harry is ultimately a force of goodness, but that its interpretation of justice is that in order for goodness to prevail, it must root out and destroy evil. And that's what the character of Dirty Harry is really all about.
Yeah. So, okay, now while everybody's getting settled in, I'm going to have a look at the article about the because what happened was this, at the time, it's interesting that at the time, this is before the action movie really kicked in the 1980s. So Dirty Harry sits more comfortably with the sort of doom and gloom Hollywood of the 70s, which you could almost think of as being like a kind of hangover after the 60s, all the drugs and everything of the 60s. In the 70s, that you had all of this optimism in the 60s from the hippies. And then by when you get into the 70s, there's just this relentless doom and gloom which hung over Hollywood up to really the Star Wars coming in 1977, and even beyond that as well. I mean, you can just list off like movie after movie from the 1970s, which are really depressing and grotty and dingy. And Dirty Harry, I think, kind of kicked that off as well. It's amazing to think that Dirty Harry came out just 2 years after Easy Rider, which is kind of its polar opposite. And even like the main killer with the Scorpio killer, which was modeled on a real life killer, but the name, I forgot the name. Do you remember the name of that?
Was it the Zodiac killer, I believe.
Zodiac killer, yeah. So you can see he's like this Antifa, like this, he's got this anarchist belt on. So it's a deliberate, at every stage of it, and we'll get into the more complicated stuff with the justice and stuff later, but it's like, almost everything about Dirty Harry is a complete snub to liberal America and California.
Yeah, definitely. I think that one vital thing thing to the movie is the setting of San Francisco. So I wrote in my notes that I thought of the song San Francisco by Scott McKenzie, which came out in 1967. So 4 years before the film Dirty Harry, it says in the song, "If you go to San Francisco, you'll meet gentle people with flowers in their hair." I don't know. Do you think that describes Dirty Harry, the character? Is he a gentle person with flowers in his hair, Morgoth?
No, he absolutely isn't. But he's not a complete bastard either. He's a man who, like, he does believe in goodness, but he also knows that the world is this sort of madhouse where you just need to lay down the law, and you need to lay it down good and hard.
Yeah, definitely. What I wrote in my notes is that he is kind of like a holdover from the 1950s. So he's the old white Anglo-Saxon American man from the 1950s, and he now finds himself in post-countercultural revolution San Francisco. So and the film definitely lays it on thick with the making sure you know that, you know, it's not the 50s or even the 60s anymore. And you have to also remember that this film only came out, like, I think it was 3 years after the Hays Code was officially abolished, the standards which prevented a lot of the, you know, the negative messages in Hollywood for about 30 or 40 years. I mean, some of the things you see in the movie is that there's dozens of different mixed race relationships. You see, it hints at homosexuality, for example. Did you notice that they had the scene where Scorpio is on the building, looking around the plaza with I think it's the Peter and Paul Cathedral. There's this, like, what I think the director implies is this gay couple. It's one is black and one is white. Yeah. A mixed race gay couple in 1971 in a film. Like, this stuff was still highly taboo back then. And one thing I noticed was that they were holding ice cream cones, and the white one had a chocolate ice cream cone and the black one had a vanilla ice cream cone, which is just foul. But I mean, at least I'll give the director some credit on being clever with that one. But then also just how much nudity is in the film as well. So, you know, he really makes clear that, you know, it's not the old WASP America anymore. It is this new, liberal progressive America, and San Francisco is the epicenter of that. But it does turn it on his head in some ways, because what you see throughout the film is that this entire, like, Rousseauian mindset that holds the city of San Francisco, it's completely incapable of stopping a maniac like Scorpio.
Yeah, it's like institutionally incapable of doing it. It couldn't do it even if it wanted to. And this is to get into the sort of to frame this is this article. So when, as I say, when Dirty Harry first came out, there was a lot of liberals of a certain background, and one of them was Pauline Kael. Obviously, you know, we know what we're talking about here. And she wrote this article in 1971, and she it became like this big thing because, as I say, Dirty Harry was originally seen as being a social commentary movie, more than like a straightforward action movie. They weren't really around. And I just thought it's just how hysterical this article is. And there's actually Clint Eastwood responded to this, and he was like really laconic, and he just said something like, "Well, she's entitled to her opinion." But what I think's interesting about this article is that it really like reveals a lot about like say their mindset. I mean, you know, not just them in particular, but the kind of just the metropolitan liberal elite, they picked up on the dog whistles. But then again, so did Middle America, you know, like people out in Kansas and all of these areas, like Middle America, they got the dog whistles and they loved it. Whereas the city, and you can see these fault lines going all the way back to the early 70s, whereas the metropolitan liberals absolutely despised it because they knew what it was. They knew what was going on with it. And so Pauline Kael's article, like this is the sub-headline. It says, "Dirty Harry is obviously a genre movie, but this action genre has always had fascist potential. It has finally surfaced. Since crime is caused by deprivation, misery, psychopathology, and social injustice, Dirty Harry is a deeply immoral movie." And so this is, she's just gone straight in sort of social justice. People think it's only been around for a few years, but it's like, no, it's been around for a long time in one way or another. And so this is where we begin to see the split in the thinking of towards a movie like Dirty Harry. So Dirty Harry sees a scumbag who needs to be put down like a dog, or at least just locked up. That's to keep people safe. Whereas when you come in on this leftist, liberal, metropolitan, you know who perspective, they've removed the element of evilness of that. And instead, he is the killer is a product of the society. And you can see the Marxism popping up and winking, and it's all about material conditions that create the person. Do you see what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's kind of also Rousseauian. It's like the idea that man is perfect in nature, and that human nature, the default of human nature is good, and that it's human institution which makes him bad. It's injustice, it's poverty, it's stuff like that. That is what creates evil. Whereas Harry kind of has the Hobbesian view of nature, that man and nature is savage, and what you need is law and order to actually uphold a safe society for people to deal with man's savage nature. And one thing I really liked about this film is that if you look at a shit film like The Joker, they always have some like kind of explanation for some why some maniac is a maniac. So they'll always have something about, oh, he was abused, oh, he was bullied at school, oh, his father like maybe even molested him or something like that. But you really don't know anything about Scorpio in the film other than he's basically this maniac. And I think that that's why Christopher Nolan's Joker was much better than the garbage Joker that came out last year. Because I think that what the character of Scorpio represents is the metaphysical force of evil. And that what the film is trying to say is that this does exist. Evil does exist. And, you know, it's not really just a function of a failure of human institution. It will always exist because man is an inherently violent creature, and that you do need eventually a force of order that is able to stand up to that evil.
Yeah, well, the liberal approach to this is to reduce human nature to a science. And so the metaphysical good or evil, sort of, it's this liberal drive to reduce everything to data, which can be understood. And so this, and then the kind of the Marxists will slip in, and it kind of crosses over. So what you then get is, well, we have to understand it. Another thing is, what we'll just to go on with Pauline Kael, she does say, like, it's like the Scorpio killer is like really exaggerated. It's like, it's this, like, everything about there's, because they are in the position where they'd have to sort of defend this, and Don Siegel's gone so far that she just couldn't do it. So Harry does think in these kind of moral terms, but then the system itself, it can't, and it has to be, you know. I mean, I think there's a distinction between the Pauline Kael and then the bureaucratic nature, which is, like, to get back to Dirty Harry a little bit.
And, you know, just thinking about the 70s, this time period, the late 60s and the 70s, there's a lot of really infamous mass murderers from this time. There's the Zodiac killer, who was never caught. There was Ted Bundy was active in the 70s. There was the Night Stalker, the original Night Stalker, who was actually only caught like 2 years ago. But, you know, with the liberal critique of you know, someone like the villain of Scorpio, their idea that this is the result of a failure of institution, with under the liberal worldview, they would consider a lot of these, like, a lot of these killers to be quote unquote privileged today. Like, you know, Ted Bundy was not some social reject. A lot of people that said him actually said that a lot of people that met him actually said that he was, you know, a likable guy, but he really was just this psychopath, this evil psychopath, really. And, you know, it doesn't really line up with a lot of their, it doesn't really line up with a lot of their narratives that, you know, someone like Scorpio is evil because, you know, he was abused by the system or something like that. Of course, today they've inserted a new layer on that, the intersectional layer. So, you know, white men can be evil now, but they'll apply that to the non-whites. So, but I don't think that when you look at this era, I don't think it's totally unrealistic to have a villain like Scorpio, because the United States did see many maniacs, who had a very similar mindset to him in this era.
Yeah. And so it's the liberal system is uncomfortable with what they actually are. But then the system which has been brought in, where because I mean, he goes on and on about the, like, his rights. It's deliberately provocative. It's everything that pisses sort of right wing or just normal, the normal man on the street. Like, you get to see this, and he really is, like, horrible in every single way. There's nothing complicated or redeeming about him. He's just like an absolute scumbag, and he rolls around, I've got rights, I want to see a lawyer. And he's just like, you know, we'll get to what happens with the girl in a bit, but he is just like killing people randomly on the streets. Like, he's just this sadistic, cowardly piece of shit. And then when like he gets arrested, he plays the victim and rolls around, and he's thinking, well, I've got rights, I've got, so he's gaming the system right in front of Harry's face, and the system sides with him.
And there's even a scene where he pays a guy to beat him up so that he can say that Harry was stalking him and actually beat him up, so that he can play the victim and to basically use that liberal sentiment that's so popular in San Francisco to essentially enable his crimes. You know, it's very similar to what you see today with things like Black Lives Matter. Like, you'll see that a lot of these, like, basically every single one of the left's heroes from the past year, be it this George Floyd guy, Jacob Blake, Ahmaud Arbery, you can just go down the list. Every single one of these people is just a total piece of shit. But they know damn well that they can basically just play that liberal sentiment. They just need to say the word racism. And then this huge, well, not only portion, it's pretty much all the intelligentsia will just rush to their defense. And, you know, kind of Dirty Harry, what it shows is, of course, it doesn't have the racial angle here, but it just shows how cynical that really, that mindset really is, where, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people are actually very conscious of. You know, a lot of these thugs that you see that end up in these, you know, hashtags on Twitter and all these like BLM martyrs, a lot of them are very cynical. Like this George Floyd guy, you saw in the video that he's saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I'm claustrophobic. Like, he knows damn well that he just needs to whine and whine and he'll get his way. So, you know, it's definitely something that exists today. And I think the worst thing I can say about it is that it essentially it rewards evil and it punishes good. I think that today that is something that is very observable, but I think that maybe in 1971, that was the very beginning of it.
Yeah, I think as well, you can see how if you're going to have this approach where it's all about understanding people's backgrounds and material needs, you can see how they're going to slip social justice in there, because then they're going to start looking at who is privileged in society and who, and that you, it seems to me that it is from a sort of the liberal, say the classic liberal, slipping into the kind of social justice stuff, because then they're going to say, well, now that we don't have good and evil anymore, and now we're going to look at everybody's backgrounds, we're going to look at their psychology, we're going to look at all of their material conditions, and once you sort of start down that road, it seems that the white privilege stuff is like just up ahead waiting to be discovered and implemented. So then you're going to end up seeing where you get migrants getting like less jail time than say white people and things like this.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, the very origins of anarcho-tyranny. So I think that today anarcho-tyranny is it's all underlined by the new like social justice intersectional ideology. And the one in Dirty Harry is one that's a lot less, it's a lot less ideological. It is a lot more, though it still has the social justice aspects in there, it is a lot more classic liberal. But you do see how even that allows for what is called anarcho-tyranny to begin to take place. The other thing I thought was interesting is that, and I wanted to talk about this a bit more later, but when you notice the difference between the police today versus the police from, say, the 1950s, I mean, it's just night and day. Today, all these police officers look like they're about to be deployed in like downtown Baghdad during the Iraq War or something like that. It's just unbelievable how militarized these police officers are. But they have this entire like Rousseauian social justice ideology, which they have to operate under. Whereas, you know, before this happened, you go 1950s, 1940s, or even if you go further back, the police officer was always just some guy with a revolver and one of those police uniforms you'll see from one of these, Dennis the Menace cartoons, where he's like some guy that waves to the children riding on their bikes to school or something like that. I mean, it's just completely a huge contrast. And you have to wonder to what extent is the militarization of the police, and to what extent does the actual tyranny come in as a result of this just incorrect vision of human nature?
Yeah, because what you end up with, and I know like it's funny because we sound like kind of like sort of the cliche of a normie con where you sit around and like moan about crime and stuff, but it is, because what you can, and this is what Dirty Harry's all about, and it's not so much about race, it's about the fact that they can't control the streets because of all of this mumbo jumbo and bureaucracy that slipped into the upper echelons of the system. They can't actually like deal with it. So the streets become anarchic and crazy. You know, it's a clever little thing the way they've got that anarchy belt buckle on the Scorpio killer, on this nut job. And so it's like he is the anarchy and the system can't deal with it anymore. And so in the real world, the cops on the streets end up being like semi-militarized because they're just running riot because they can't, they've got to deal with it like in the here and now. And you know, as far as like this idea beyond just the police department and everything, it's also got this like false model of man, as you were saying. And so we it's like there's just this sort of this ideal of a human, and it's universal and it's blank. And so there's not really any quality control or anything. You can't differentiate no matter how disparate their backgrounds or ethnic groups or all of this. It doesn't matter. It's just one human unit. But in reality, down on the streets, it's just complete chaos. And so at the base level, the police have to deal with that. But yet at the same time, the whole of the system is still on the side of the police. So in a way, like Dirty Harry's like way ahead of its time, even though, you know, I mean, somebody wanted to mention his tweed jacket and some of the stuff look a little bit dated, but the actual concept, I think, was like way, way ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, one thing about that scene with the anarchist belt buckle, I think that, I don't know, was it the anarchist belt buckle or was it the peace symbol, like the hippie peace symbol? Because I know that the shot before, it shows the hippie peace symbol, which was, you know, the icon of the hippie movement, which, or you know, San Francisco was the epicenter of that. It has a shot of the peace symbol on the wall. Then it goes over to Scorpio's belt buckle, and then it zooms out. And what he's doing is he's stalking a group of kids at a playground. And I guess what it kind of shows there is that, and this is just after the part of the film where he had kidnapped, raped, and murdered a young girl, but was released due to we can get into this too, due to Harry violating his rights and the evidence being deemed inadmissible. But what I thought was interesting was that it just has that shot of that hippie peace symbol on the wall, then zooms out to this psychopath, this murderer, just looking over this group of kids. And everyone knows, you know, what this man, what his intentions are. His intentions are to kill them and to kidnap them and to continue his reign of terror. But I think what it does say, though, is that the end result of that ideology, the end result of that vision of the world that the hippie symbol embodies, it is someone like Scorpio looking over a bunch of helpless children and really having no way to protect them from the evil that is present.
Yeah. So this is where Harry's problem. So Harry's there to serve and protect the public. He's not there to be a bureaucrat for the state. And the way he looks at it is that the state is letting the people down. If you want to do this, I mean, I was going to do my own video on Dirty Harry because I do find it to be like a fascinating subject. Because what happens when eventually like we discussed, the concept of good just disappears. And it's just a bureaucratic process instead. And so then you find that you're at odds with the system itself. If you want to do good, then the system's there to hinder you. And I mean, just listen, the Pauline Kael article, she moves on. She says, the movie opens on a memorial plaque in the lobby of the San Francisco Hall of Justice, and we read the words, in tribute to the police officers of San Francisco who gave their lives in the line of duty. And then the beginning of the list of names. This is a rather strange opening for Dirty Harry, since it isn't about the death of a police officer. The tribute, however, puts the viewer in a respectful frame of mind. We all know that many police are losing their lives. The movie then proceeds to offer a magically simple culprit for their deaths, the liberals. So she's the way what they're worried about here is that it's like a sort of populism which is creeping in, which the masses are on side with the police, and it's the liberals who are the real problem. The liberals are responsible for all of these policemen dying.
Yeah, I think that what I wanted to do was analyze kind of the I want to contrast kind of Harry's time and the man that he embodies versus the one of San Francisco. And Dirty Harry, as I mentioned earlier, he's a man of the 1950s. And when probably people like this woman who wrote this article, when liberals think of the 1950s, they always think of the straight white male archetype, the racism, the sexism, the homophobia and stuff like that. And what right-wingers always think of is the happy family values. They always think of the children living in the house with the suburb where they still both have two parents in their household. They have a car. The mother doesn't have to work. And it's really all like happy and happy-go-lucky. And, you know, I think that in some ways both can actually be true because, you know, the archetype which Dirty Harry resembles, the straight white male patriarch from the 1950s. I think that one was necessary to have that kind of happy-go-lucky life of the 1950s because, you know, they had to realize that evil existed and that in order to actually have, you know, the cheerful children riding their bikes to school, and, you know, the happy wife, you know, who just loves her husband and she hugs him when he comes home. To actually have that kind of ideal, you actually do need strong men to seek out evil and destroy it, because, you know, that isn't the human norm. That only can come through order. And in some ways, the archetype of Dirty Harry, that kind of man is necessary in order to have that kind of happy, peace-loving, those happy, peace-loving family values that the 1950s embody. And that stuff wasn't really possible. And it's certainly not possible today, because the worldview that we have just denies that, that, you know, evil out there exists, and it blames that archetype for the problem to begin with. So in some ways, you can never really have that. They constantly talk about love, they constantly talk about peace and stuff, but you can never have that unless there actually is order that comes in and roots out evil.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, just to skip onto another movie, it's similar to that A Few Good Men, where they put the military on trial. So then once again, you've got like the liberals, liberal lawyers and bureaucrats, and they like have a really hard time with Jack Nicholson, who's this grizzled old general, and about how brutal his methods are. And he says at the end of the day, the only reason you can go to these swanky dinner parties and parade around your liberal values is because I'm on that wall. Like, you need me on that wall. You secretly want me on that wall. But at the same time, you're going to stab us in the back, like, nonstop. And this is the same as Dirty Harry, of course, where you actually, unless you did have, like, the cops on the beat killing scumbags, it is going to like descend. I mean, I think they do a great job of that as well, just to switch a little bit. So San Francisco, like, I looked this up the other day. I've always, because of Dirty Harry and that, like, in terms of the Western world, I'm probably as far away from San Francisco, both physically and like geographically, and in terms of values, like I'm about as far away you can get from San Francisco while still being in like the Western world. But I always assumed that San Francisco was a complete dump, probably because I've listened to one too many like far right podcasts as well. But when you actually look at the Wikipedia page, it's like it's very rich. I was really surprised how wealthy it is. But the impression that I got of San Francisco, like when I thought about it, it was because I grew up on Dirty Harry, and San Francisco is depicted as being like a complete shithole. It really looks horrible, and it's as if all of the idealism of the 60s, of the Cultural Revolution, the hippie movement, and then it's like all that liberation, and it's just ended up turning into like seedy titty bars and like drug pushers on the corners and prostitution. Like, that's what all of that freedom and liberalism kind of, that idea, that's what it turned into within just 2 or 3 years as well.
Yeah, and I actually thought of an example, because I watched the film twice this week, and I watched the second one today. And when I watched the film earlier, the one news article I thought of the most, the news event in the news recently, it was the murder of Emily Jones in the UK. And I know we're on YouTube here, so I have to be careful with what I say. But there's a subplot in the film where what Scorpio does is he kidnaps a 14-year-old girl, and he holds her hostage, essentially. So he sends the police like her bra, a tooth that he has ripped out of her mouth, a piece of her hair, and says that she has like 48 hours until she suffocates, and that they must deliver him $200,000 or else he'll let her die. And what is revealed later is that he actually had just already killed her, that he had allowed her to die no matter what. But this is why Dirty Harry tortures Scorpio, and this is why he is let off the hook, because Harry has to hunt him down. He breaks into the football stadium where Scorpio was the groundskeeper. He shoots him in the leg, and then like stamps on his on the wound in his leg, demanding he tell them where the girl is. And what happens in the film is that he's let off because the evidence that Harry collected, the rifle, the confession, all that was inadmissible in court because he did not have a warrant to conduct that search. They had no evidence against Scorpio that was admissible. And, you know, And I think that this is probably, this has to definitely be the scene, the scene of in the football stadium. This has to be the one which drives liberals the most crazy, because it is like him stamping on the leg of a, of Scorpio, like in the bullet wound, saying, "Where's the girl? Where's the girl?" And he's shrieking, "I want a lawyer. I have my rights." And, you know, I thought one thing that was very similar to this, and really, I think it shows where this kind of liberal Rousseauian, positive vision of human nature really leads. And I thought of the death of the young girl, Emily Jones, in the UK from earlier this year. For anyone who doesn't know, she was murdered by an illegal Albanian migrant. I'm not going to go into exactly how she was murdered, but she was murdered in broad daylight in probably the most ruthless manner imaginable. You can look that up for yourself, but I don't know if I can repeat it on YouTube. But what you see, though, is when I read up about this case, what you see is that just this liberal system failed all along the way. First of all, she was an illegal migrant into England, into the UK. She should never have been there. She asked for asylum and was denied asylum, but then won it on an appeal. But she was unemployed and had a history of violent outbursts against other people when she had lived in Albania, and I think when she lived in Germany as well. So this person, there was just zero benefit to having her in England whatsoever. There was no reason for her to be there, and she was able to get her hands on a young child and murder her. And not only that, why it was in the news today was that she was not convicted of murder, because a doctor named Saeed Afghan, you know, make of that what you will, declared that she was mentally unstable, and instead she was convicted of manslaughter. Now, she was still sentenced to life in prison, but eligible for release after 8 years. And meaning that, you know, there is a chance that she's going to be walking the streets again, and this could happen to another young child. And this entire mindset failed all along the way, because under a traditional right-wing, you know, understanding of nature, a Hobbesian one that like what Dirty Harry has, A, she never would have been allowed in the country to begin with. B, she never would have been allowed near children. And C, if she was able to inflict such a horrible crime, she would have been executed. She would have been given capital punishment and never given the opportunity to ever inflict that against an innocent person again. You know, when you look at these pictures of this young girl, it's really quite haunting, because she's just so happy. She's just like so full of life, and, you know, would be the light of the life of any grandparent or any parent. And to think that like such a horrific crime was inflicted on her is just absolutely shocking. But that is why, though, you need those strong men who are willing to seek out evil and destroy it. Because, you know, without that, you can't have that happy-go-lucky young girl going off to school and just loving life, unless there's actually some force of order that is there to protect it, because, you know, human nature isn't positive like this. And I think that was, you know, that was, I think, when I thought of that a lot this week when I saw this film, because it says a lot about, this. And I think that the end result of this understanding of man is the death of someone like Emily Jones.
Yeah. So when you dig into it, you get the approach which the British government have got, where they see a person like that as being a problem to be solved. And it's as if they're a machine which is like got some loose parts, but at no point like does the system recognize that it is an act of evil. They don't. Then the liberal system is like really uncomfortable with that kind of language, unless they're directing it at like people like us. But by and large, they prefer to view people as these like robots. And then if somebody goes off the rails, they'll kind of say that they've got some kind of medical condition. Basically, it's that they're faulty. But they'd never really explain what the sort of ideal human is. But good and evil doesn't come into it. So we can't, then when it comes to the punishment, because they have said it's not their fault, they've removed the agency from them, and they even all of these diseases, schizophrenia and all of this, they've come up with all of this stuff as a way. I mean, it may be a real disease, but that doesn't necessarily mean the person isn't evil. Whereas Harry's approach and the approach of people on the right is to have more of an absolutist position and to say that this is an evil and the person needs to be destroyed. And so this is where Harry comes from. But this, I think, you then have to say, because, you know, everything has to get deconstructed and stuff. So where do you get that intuition from? Because this is what they'll say. If you are then their counter argument, and this is what Pauline Kael is kind of getting into, and where Harry himself says it in the second movie as well, which we can get onto in a bit. But basically, then you're in a situation where good and evil become something which is subjective. It's no longer like sort of written down in law. You're just going to end up, it's going to be like the Wild West where people are just being shot left, right, and center, because then somebody, it's like down to you what is good or what is evil. And so in a way, the law, the system is there to codify it and get it written down and make everything concrete so you know where you are. But at the same time, they're going so far with it that they're removing all agency from even the idea of evil, like, disappears. And it's just a problem. The human and human nature becomes a problem to be solved, just like their approach to a machine.
Yeah, and what you see with this, I think that, you know, in these days, people with this mindset would have been some hippie on the streets of San Francisco with long hair, some headband, playing on a ukulele or something like that, or playing the Beatles on the ukulele or something like that. I don't know. But today we actually see that, you know, people with that mindset, when taken to its logical conclusion, and, you know, when the falsehoods of human nature really come back to bite, you see where that really goes, in that they actually will inflict real evil in pursuit of this kind of egalitarian delusion. What you see, what this has become today, is people being dragged out of their cars and beaten half to death in the street because they were wearing a MAGA hat. You know, I made a video earlier this year on BitChute only, titled "The Twisted Morality of Anti-Racism," and what you see is that today this kind of ideal, this egalitarian ideal, and it's both painted by liberalism, but also painted by the intersectional social justice lens, the racial lens as well. But today you will see people are perfectly happy to inflict real violence in pursuit of this ideal. You know, I mean, how many videos have emerged from the last few months of people being beaten in the streets? We have the Antifa guy just shooting someone in Portland in cold blood. And then you can just think of that. You don't even have to take that extreme. You just think of like the average lib shit today. They're just like an absolutely ruthless person. Just think of how just the amount of hate that has been directed at people like us, or not even just people like us, just the normal Trump supporting boomer in like Montana or something like that. It's just unbelievable. And you know, I kind of think that was like the beginning of that, and we're now starting to see where this kind of this kind of vision of the world, this peace loving vision of the world goes. And it, where it goes is that it's not just like anarchistic. It's not just that it allows for evil to happen. It eventually does become that evil and will inflict brutalities far beyond anything that would be inflicted by a traditional society in pursuit of the egalitarian delusion.
Yeah, I mean, you can see how fragile it is in Dirty Harry, because one of the things they do on all of the movies, and it became like a joke on The Simpsons, is that they, even then in the early 70s, they kind of got that they're sailing close to the wind. And so they, in the first one, like in each of the movies, Harry gets like a minority group, like politically correct partner, and they always get shot as well. Like, and that's like that became like a famous Simpsons joke. And like, it's, you know, just to sort of lighten things up a bit, it is funny. Like he is introduced to his new partner, which he doesn't want. He's forced to have him, and he's like, he's literally called Chico Gonzalez. And then in the second one, Magnum Force, he has a black guy who he's forced to be a partner with. And then in the third one, he has a woman, and they all get shot. I think in the second one, the black guy gets blown up, Chico gets shot, and the woman gets shot as well, I think. But so it's always like, well, we'll take this we'll tick this box. But then once we need Harry to like really go to town, we'll just kind of incapacitate them. We'll just conveniently get them out of the picture. But what they're trying to do there is have Harry like representative of like a sort of classic liberal like civic nationalism, you know, so that they're saying like he isn't actually a racist. He makes a few jokes and then winks, and but he isn't what you think he is. He is like there to defend the liberal order. But you can see that how easy it is. Like if you look at where we are now, like that's been weaponized against them. It would be much harder for them to get away with that now. Now it would have to be where like the main like Dirty Harry would have to be like an ethnic minority or something.
Yeah, or another thing that often ruins films these days, I find, is that you can't be an egalitarian and a badass at the same time. Like they'll have some film where like they'll have some badass guy, and oftentimes it'll be a white guy, but then he'll like beat someone half to death because they said like this racist joke or something like that. And it's like no real badass actually acts like that. I mean, at least with Dirty Harry, you know, you get the sense that he is an actual like old white guy from the 50s, you know, past his time. But, you know, I find like they just can't do it today because the social justice stuff needs to be in there so hard. You know, you'd end up with like Dirty Harry punching somebody's brains out because they misgendered someone.
Yeah, it is. And what I wanted to get into as well in my notes here, I've got it, which is the question of how liberals reacted to the movie, which I thought was interesting, because it isn't just about race, and I think it's got a lot to do with power. And that's why I kind of touched on the Pauline Kael article at the start, because what she sees there is somebody who is operating outside of the system as it's been set up, because the system as it's been set up, which doesn't work and protects the villains, what it does do is protect. Let's, you know, I'll put it this way, because we're on YouTube, and you know, I want it to stay on YouTube. But let's just say that you come from a demographic which has been getting run out of market towns across Europe for the last like 1,000 years or something. Like, and then somebody, like maybe you played a part in it, but then this liberal system is primarily there to take care of you, and there's all these safeguards in it, that's going to appeal to certain people. But it isn't actually, it's kind of, you know, you can see where they're coming from. You can see where the liberal mindset's coming from. Because what Harry's doing and what worries them is that this appeal to like a goodness outside of the system, it also appeals to the masses. And so when they're calling Dirty Harry fascist, it isn't about like race or ethnicity, it's about power. And they see that the prospect that somebody will step outside of this and point to the absurdity of the system. I mean, look, this is like the Donald Trump thing, isn't it? And then they're going to like rile up all of the masses in opposition to the kind of liberal metropolitan types who've created this system, and then show it up for what it is. And then at the same time, it's protecting them, and they're going to start and feel vulnerable. So when they come out screaming fascism, it's actually a lot of the time got nothing to do with ethnicity or racial politics. And it comes down to power, because then you get this kind of archetype of the you know, the Caesar type or the Trump type or the strong man, who is then going to say, well, there's a goodness and your system is in the way of it, and the system needs to be broken apart for the greater good. And that scares the hell out of them.
Yeah, definitely. Law and order has always been a selling point for the public, especially. Unfortunately, we've never actually had someone who has delivered on those, at least not in any meaningful way, at least not in the last 75 years. But that is something that I think that, you know, the left definitely changed their attitudes towards, I think, post-World War II. Because when you look at the left, the old left, it was very much a populist movement. It was a movement of the masses. It was like the supposed oppressed working classes were going to overthrow the awful rich bourgeoisie and the oligarchs and create this workers' paradise, this classless society. But what you saw in the earlier 20th century, and of course, you know, we're being careful here, but there are times where the working class will actually side, and actually, I think this might actually be more natural, is they will actually side with the right, and that it is actually possible to have class unity, and you know, law and order is something that is very popular for that. So post World War II, they did it, the left changed quite a bit in that they more focused on culture, and that's, you know, when you get the things like the whiteness things, the whiteness studies and stuff like that, because they, I think they realize, and you know, when I say the left here, we are, there are certain things that there's a certain context, a certain group that is definitely involved in this, but they are definitely afraid of the masses in many ways, because you know, I don't think that the masses naturally are left wing. I don't think that the average working man or the middle class I don't think that communism is their natural tendency. I do think it is something more similar to fascism, where, and this is what, this really does scare the cosmopolitans. And that's why I think there's just been so much effort by the left for the last 50, 60 years in defanging the possibility of any kind of populist movement, which could use law and order as a, and Caesarism, as you talked about in one of your recent videos, as a route to power and a route to actually instill order and to get the masses on its side.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see in the system that they have constructed, I mean, it's a really cynical outlook, but you can say that the system as it is, and Dirty Harry, these bureaucrats and these lawyers and all of these like ridiculous rights. I mean, it is a little bit overdone in Dirty Harry, but we get the point. And you all of a sudden you realize that actually the system as it is, it's not there to punish criminals, it's there to protect the elites themselves. That's what they've sort of wrapped around themselves. And obviously Harry threatens that. But then I mean, Jonathan Bowden did a speech, or he wrote a book called Pulp Fascism. And what he was getting at, he mentioned Dirty Harry and Conan and things like this. And you've got these like right-wing, deeply right-wing archetypes, and they are these powerful men who intuitively know what's good and what's evil, and then they're going to lay down the law, and the general public finds something in that. They like that, and the left don't, because the left's all about equality, and it's all very boring, and it's all academic. And so you can see this is why they can't meme, right? Because look how complicated, look at the task to try and explain why the Scorpio killer shouldn't be just shot. Like why he shouldn't just be dragged into the back of a van and kind of have a bullet put through his head and then thrown into a concrete pit somewhere. Like, to explain why that shouldn't happen is actually a really difficult task, because what they're dealing with is like a primordial drive. Because if you go back to the Middle Ages, say, when we didn't have all of this liberal stuff, like someone like the Scorpio killer would just be torn apart by the mob. Or you know, try and imagine like someone like that running around in medieval Japan. That'd be like a samurai warrior would just be dispatched to kill him. And it would be as simple as that, because it would be instinctive that he's like a pest, he's a vermin and has to be done in. Where we are now is where everything has to be rationalized and everything has to be codified and or like, you know, broken apart and explained.
Yeah, I actually had an interaction like that with one of my family members. I actually made a video about him about a year ago, about this leftist Marxist family member that I have. And I remember from a few years ago, this was before I was into YouTube politics and into the dissident right, but there was a terrorist that had stormed into the Canadian Parliament and he was shot by a guard there. And this family member tried to say how it was wrong to shoot a guy running through the halls of your parliament with a shotgun. Now, I'm not a huge fan of our politicians in Canada, but let's say I certainly don't endorse that kind of behavior. But I mean, that's beside the point. Like, this family member is someone who's very like cynical and very like angry all the time. But he has this kind of like worldview of this like egalitarian worldview that, you know, he can actually like he can actually somehow justify in his mind through mental gymnastics that shooting a guy running around with a shotgun trying to kill people is worse than, you know, almost like that, that it's worse than the act of him, of the terrorist himself. So, like you can also compare that to the video that you had made about that, that stabbing spree, that, there would be all these like liberals on Twitter when someone's asking for a description of this guy rampaging through a city on a stabbing spree. They're all angry when people are asking for a description because, let's be honest, they know he's probably not going to be melanin deficient, so to say. And it's almost like under this morality, acknowledging human nature. So acknowledging that people aren't evil, acknowledging that people aren't inherently good is almost worse than the crime itself. So like, I just feel like in a lot of these liberals' heads, people on Twitter saying like, you know, cynically posting like diversity is our strength, or like, here we go again, or here's more cultural enrichment from the usual crowd. They actually think that these people are more evil than the person rampaging through the city, stabbing people.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, it's sort of mentioned in passing where Dirty Harry has I think it's the mayor. He's introduced to Dirty Harry and he says, I've heard of your name. Were you involved in such and such an incident like last year? It seemed to get messy. And what had happened was that Harry had just shot a man in the back as he was running down the street. And the mayor said, well, how are you? Like, you're a cop. You're not the judge, or let alone the executioner. How did you know that he was going to commit a crime? And Harry says, when I see a guy running down the street with a bread knife, chasing a woman down the street with a hard on and a bread knife, I'm going to shoot the bastard. That's my policy. And like, it's just so obvious that what's going on there. But of course, the bureaucrat will be like, you know, it's like the well actually meme.
Yeah. And then the mayor actually replies, he has a point.
Yeah, he does have a point as well. So one of the things I wanted to get into as well was the torture scene where, so just to set this up, like the Scorpio killer has a girl, a 14-year-old girl who he's raped, we find out. And he's also, I think it's, he cuts her finger off and sends it to the mayor, and she's buried underground and she's got like 12 hours of oxygen left. And so she's going to die unless they find him. And then this is when it all really sort of heats up, because Harry's in a race against time and he ends up tracking him down. It's a bit of a convoluted scene. It's like he chases him through. They're going to pay him off. They agree to give him the money if he says where the girl is. And Harry has to run through with Chico Gonzalez helping him out. And he has to like deliver the money. But I mean, just as an aside, it's really funny that like he's like, it's just constant degeneracy and drug pushing as he's running. Like he bumps into about four different couples, the gay, and there's people having, like, got drugs. And it's just the way they depict San Francisco's like really badly. But then eventually another thing is he carries a flick knife. Like he's a cop who carries a flick knife and he sticks it into the killer's kneecap. So he wounds it and then hunts him down. It's like he wings him. He wings his prey so that it's easier to go after him and catch him. But then eventually he shoots him again in the other leg. And then he tortures him to find, like, because he needs to know where the girl is. Well, of course, everything that he's done, he breaks into his little like shitty flat thing that he's got. He's got his gun there. He's broken all kinds of laws, but he needs to find out where the girl is. It's as simple as that. And so you end up where he's torturing the man on an American football field, and he does get where the girl is, but the girl's already dead. But and so this opens up all kinds of a can of worms, and it's similar to the scenario where somewhere in a city the terrorists have planted a bomb. Are you then allowed to torture the terrorists in order to find out where the bomb is? And by doing so, you're going to break all of these rules. It's something that the liberal system really struggles with.
Yeah, it's hard to answer because, you know, I think that ideally people would like there to actually be some kind of regulation on, you know, police work. We don't want them to have absolute power, even though, you know, I think we can definitely recognize, you know, human nature and recognize that, you know, people aren't just these care bearers in that human nature isn't that of a care bearer. We can recognize that. But you do, I think most people would want there to be some kind of limitation on it. But then is there some situations where order is allowed to break the law by necessity? And that is a very difficult question to answer, because when we get into the second film, that's kind of the point, that's kind of the point where it kind of flips this question on its head from the first one. But yeah, I mean, I think that there are some times that it just necessitates that. I mean, the film puts out that, you know, this girl is going to die unless he gets that location. So he must do what is necessary in that point, at that point. And if that requires, you know, breaking some laws, which you would, you know, generally like to have, you would generally like to have in place, I think sometimes you just have to go above and beyond if the stakes are too high.
Yeah, but if he followed the rules, she would have. I mean, she died anyway. But basically, she would have been completely doomed if he did followed the rules and did what was expected of him. And this is the whole problem. So yeah. It's like, is there some kind of special sort of get out, which is, I mean, as far as I'm aware, nothing like that actually exists, except for Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, you do have to have some kind of suspension of the laws that you would like to have in place on, you would like to have in place as the norm. Does there need to be some kind of get out clause? Like, you know, I'm not the, my Roman history is not great, but I do know that they had like these laws that leaders could be given emergency powers in order to, like, for example, in the case of a war, they could be given emergency powers to go above what the law generally prescribed. And I do think that is something that is necessary. And you know, it's also maybe, I'd like to get into the second film and how it interprets this, but it could also be something interesting to ask today, because we might actually be flipping, it might be flipped on its head, where we might actually be the ones calling out the power structure in terms of things like COVID, where you have all these libshits out there who are just demanding more and more and more state restrictions to fight this supposed pandemic of COVID, which, you know, I am someone who does believe that in a time of crisis, authority does have the right to restrict certain civil liberties in order to uphold order. But when is that appropriate? And it is very interesting today that you do have the people, like the people who would shriek at a film like Dirty Harry, you have the same people, like, you know, demanding that a bunch of, you know, people be hauled off to jail because they went for a walk in the park with their grandma.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to get too much sidetracked on all of that. Like, these are the cozy streams where we can kind of ignore all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, so let's like sort of enter into the second movie, because if, like, to go back, the accusation that was hurled at Dirty Harry was that it was an apology for fascists, and, you know, we kind of got into why he's dangerous from a liberal perspective. He's dangerous because he's seeing a morality which is outside of the bureaucratic left-leaning liberal system, which in many ways is there to protect their own ideals. And then when you get into the second movie, it's as if they're answering the criticisms, because I watched John Milius, who also did Conan the Barbarian, and he and other, like, kind of right-wing movies, The Red Dawn he did. And so he says, look, Dirty Harry wasn't a fascist. I'm going to show you what actual fascism in the police force would look like. And in Magnum Force, what you've got is these young, that it's interesting that they're in their own way, they're young idealists, but on the far right, in terms of authoritarianism. And then they're just going out and just killing scumbags. They look up to Dirty Harry, and they've come up through the academy, and they're all, like, great at shooting. Like, they're better at shooting than what Harry is. And so you've got this newer, hardcore version of Harry coming up and that they've kind of taken from him and thought, well, let's just go all the way and go out and just blow these scumbags away without any kind of tipping the hat to the system and to all these scumbag lawyers and all of these rights. Like, let's just forget it and go out and just kill them. Like, it's pure vigilantism. So Emilius is saying, like, this is what it would really look like. Harry, because Harry still actually believes in justice, he just thinks the system's shit.
Yeah, and I watched the second film earlier today. It was the first time I had seen it. And first of all, I will say it's an inferior film to the original, definitely, which is the case with a lot of sequels. But I think for a few reasons. One is that the plot was a lot more silly. I thought, like, you know, with the villain of Scorpio, it is someone that's somewhat believable. Of course, you know, there aren't actual cops wielding 44 Magnum shooting bank robbers in the streets. But, I mean, the plot did seem a lot more silly and far-fetched, I found. And, you know, they did try to insert a lot more of raw action. You know, the gunfights were much more over the top. There was like the car chases were more over the top and stuff. The plot was a lot more complex. But I think that where it kind of really missed the mark is that I don't think what it's showing is quote unquote fascism. I mean, it might be what some shitlib would call fascism, but it's not the same as what the first film was portraying because, and I don't really want to use the word fascism because this isn't something that's unique to fascism alone. This is just more of a traditional interpretation of man and criminal justice. It's very legalistic. So, you know, you can say that evil exists out there and that, you know, people do need to go out and destroy it. But there is a expectation of some kind of due process. You know, you wouldn't expect, you know, the average person to just go out and then shoot somebody for stealing a ham sandwich from the convenience store. I don't think that really is an accurate portrayal of, you know, what fascism was historically or what really any kind of right-wing traditional interpretation of criminal justice is. It seems like it's more like anarchism or something like that. It's more of a right-winger under anarchism more than it actually is any kind of fascism, because fascism and these kind of systems, they're very legalistic and they also have a very strong emphasis on order.
Yeah, and Harry, he brings it up in the with the leader of this kind of breakaway sort of squad. They kind of have a back and forth in the car, and Harry says, like, you know, it begins where you're going to go out. And at the beginning of the movie, when it's like a bunch of gangsters, like a top mob boss has just got off scot-free for some technicality. And then they're going, they're like, the car's full of like gangsters, and they're driving away, like feeling really smug with themselves. And then the cop, the rogue cop, just walks up and just blows them all away in the back of the car. And then when Harry arrives, he's like, he kind of got a smile on his face, and he's kind of thinking, well, yeah, this is like, he says it couldn't have happened to a better bunch of guys. But then when he realizes it was a policeman, or he starts to suspect, he says, well, hang on a minute. Like, it starts off where we're shooting gangsters, and, you know, quietly he's kind of, he doesn't mind that. But where does it all end? Like, eventually you're going to have where like your neighbor shoots you because your dog pissed on his lawn. Like, that's the example that he gives. So eventually it's going to be like get completely out of hand, because who or what decides? And you end up getting into this like, really like dangerous, weird territory.
Yeah, because you see, it portrays an incomplete version of a right-wing worldview, because criminal justice, law and order, these are right-wing concepts. And the character of Dirty Harry certainly is a right-wing archetype. But these also involve things like a more complete right-wing worldview involves things like hierarchy and involves things like authority and involves things like responsibility. So these responsibilities would be designated to people who were deemed worthy of them under a traditional worldview, rather than, I mean, I know you could say that the cops in this film, they were cops themselves, so like they were defenders of the public or something like that. But it was very clear, though. I mean, they don't a more complete worldview definitely has to take into account that, you know, you can't just have people running around and shooting each other in the back of the head just because they had broken a law or something like that, or you just made them angry. I think that, you know, the answer is that you do need to have some kind of hierarchy. You do need some kind of authority that is actually able to designate what is right and what is wrong, what is right and what is wrong. And, you know, what the leftist probably would answer was, well, who is to decide that? Who is to decide that? How is that person not corrupt? And I say my answer to that is that you're never going to have someone that is completely infallible, but you do need to just give that power to the people who are both the most worthy, the most competent, but also have the most loyalty and the most skin in the game. And that's kind of how you balance that. That's how you kind of balance the sword of criminal justice with the ideal of order and the ideal of goodness and how it's actually used to uphold that.
Yeah. Or religion, where if you had like strong religious values, you would then have something of like a compass, to a moral compass, because as it stands in Dirty Harry, the left can criticize it because there isn't really one there, except it has to go back, as Harry would point out, to like the law and order as it's written sort of in a basic way, without all the dodgy lawyers and all of the bullshit liberal rights that everybody's handed. He'd probably want to see it all stripped down to its basic components. Whereas what separates the rogue cops is that they're just deciding without any authority at all. At the other side of it, on the left liberal side of it, you've got all of that's where all of this bureaucratic nonsense comes from, because they don't have that compass at all. So everything's a sort of a scientific materialist exercise, if you know what I mean. And that seems to be, in my view, I mean, the worst of it all, because then the criminals get to go around killing everybody and you nobody can do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up, what you end up with is the worst of both worlds. Like I said earlier, what you end up with is good being punished and evil being rewarded, and that is really the end result. But I don't know, I do feel like, though, like the second film, it shouldn't really be seen as a criticism of fascism. Maybe that was the director's intent. It's a pretty poor one. It seems like this is more like libertarianism or like anarcho-capitalism or something that it's criticizing.
Yeah, well, so the second one, I mean, I can see in the first one where they come from with the power thing. But I kind of understand where they're coming from in terms of power, but I think it's more pandering to them. Like this is sort of a bunch of young, and they're all like white, and they're all well spoken. So this is like the true nightmare for the liberals, and this is the way they want. This is the way they want like the right wing to be, is like these people sort of going around just dictating the might is right kind of ethic, because that's what it boils down to. But in actual fact, that's also what the left leads to as well. The kind of postmodern deconstructionist stuff, because, you know, if you don't have a moral compass, that's where it's going to end up.
Yeah, with the left today, because I think Dirty Harry is, it's still dealing with the new left, but an earlier earlier incarnation of the new left, whereas the left as it exists today, it has internalized a lot of the intersectional ideology, whereas it actually does declare certain groups of people to just be metaphysically evil, and pretty much it will justify any kind of violation of this person. The rights that their own liberal system is supposedly supposed to award this person will be violated in pursuit of the social justice of the intersectional agenda. You know, you'll see, because I think anyone can, leftist, at least in theory, supports, supports some kind of rights, level of law and order. I mean, you know, they have an incorrect interpretation of it. But, you know, when you see things like the Black Lives Matter riots today, they will throw out everything. They'll throw out all of the rights that they supposedly award to someone if this person is deemed to be a quote unquote racist. So what you see with them is that their kind of lovey-dovey Rousseauian view of the world that gets thrown out the window when someone is deemed evil in accordance to the updated, more intersectional version of the New Left.
Yeah, and I think a thing to bring in here as well is that even in the sort of vigilante squad of Magnum Force, and then definitely with Harry himself, and this gets into it, we touched earlier on the Emily Jones case, but then, you know, it's like every day I see Daily Mail articles, especially the Daily Mail, but there's more than that. And I really hate the Daily Mail. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. And because the sort of the normie kind of right in Britain, I don't know if the Daily Mail carries in Canada and America and everywhere, but it is this huge paper, and you'll get the sort of center right, sort of our equivalent to the kind of Boomer MAGA types. And they all love the Daily Mail because the Daily Mail, it has this endless kind of cycle of what I call misery porn. And what it does is rile everybody up with, it'll pick out all of these outrages. I don't want to get the channel shut down, but, you know, from certain groups doing certain things. And it stokes everybody up into this angry mode where they all demand, again, to get back to what I touched on before, like this, the mob, the masses, they're all, it stokes them up and makes them all angry. But then the thing is, it never offers them any catharsis, because if you then get like a right-wing populist party popping up and saying, well, we are going to do this and that and that to stop this, the Daily Mail will be the first in line to attack them and tear them down and call them neo-Nazis and all of the rest of it. So what it does is create this anger and this frustration that justice is not being served, because it knows that these things are deeply embedded within the psychology of the population, of the masses. And so on the one hand, it panders to that day in, day out. But then when there's some kind of solution emerges, or some group or political party or individual pops up and they say, okay, well, we are going to do this and that, then the Daily Mail will tear them down. So people are never allowed that kind of catharsis. And when we look with that kind of ending, so, you know, where the criminal, something horrible has happened, the Daily Mail will inform you of it, but then they'll also inform you that they're going to like do 2 weeks in jail for a rape or something, or they'll get nothing. But then they're not going to let you actually have that moment where true justice is served. And this is actually what the whole system, this is like plays a role in Dirty Harry, because what the end of Dirty Harry, despite it all, the masses, the normies who watch that will cheer on that he just blows this horrible scumbag. He just shoots him and then like into the pond. And so then there's that kind of closure. There's this, as I say, this catharsis where, okay, a bad man is now dead and I feel better for that. Whereas if you look at this approach of the kind of the left liberal, where everything, they reduce everything to being a medical condition, well, then, as we said, they've also removed the moral element. So then there's no, the system can never actually offer any kind of catharsis to the masses. They can never really say justice has been served, because what people really want is revenge and a pound of flesh. And what a system does, which is based purely on these rational, well, let's just say it's an illness, or they had a tough upbringing, that can never happen. And this is why I think there's this constant frustration and anger, and the Daily Mail panders to that like every day.
Yeah, and I guess like what is the way out of that? Because I don't think it would be effective, like the solution that is that the villains in the second film were proposing, that you know, they just go around and hunt down maniacs. Because I don't think, because the problem is that I don't think that order ever actually comes out of vigilantism. I think eventually it's kind of Caesarism that people want, or it is like that archetype, like Harry, kind of the strong man who steps up and puts his foot down and declares that we're going to have law and order once and for all. You know, Trump tried to run on that. Problem is, like, he was saying one thing the entire year and doing a completely different thing. And yeah, I just think that is something that the public is just dying for. But I think that the system just won't allow them to have that because it's just too dangerous to the system that to allow a strong man to actually take matters into his own hands and actually declare that we are going to have law and order for once.
Well, I mean, like, again, if you had a sort of spiritual component to the society writ large, you would then that morality would then be sort of implemented, codified into the legal system. So then the wider of the value system of the society would then exist within the laws, and the punishments would be seem to be fit. So, you know, in Britain we were still hanging people in the 1950s, and you see slowly but surely it all gets softer and softer.
Yeah, and I mean, you can look at across America today that this kind of soft form of criminal justice, it's resulted in cities like Detroit. It's turned cities into places like Chicago or St. Louis and stuff like this, where crime is just absolutely rampant. But there is really just no way within the system of dealing with it, because the problems are just so they're just so institutional and they're just so fundamental that unless there's actually a strong change in mindset, then I don't think you're actually going to make any progress. I do think that my response to a lot of people on the left is that I do think that a more right wing, a more traditional understanding of criminal justice would make law enforcement a lot less brutal, because it would not need to get involved in so many situations, because it wouldn't let it get that way. You know, San Francisco in the film never would have got that way if it wasn't for the ideology. The ideology that took place. That kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, you mentioned that in the 50s, Britain, they were still hanging people, but the police officers, it was just some, you know, happy-go-lucky Bobby on the corner with a little billy club, like they called it back then. I think that's what they called it. Sorry if that's incorrect. Some guy with a, you know, one of those iconic helmets and billy clubs on the corner waves to the children as they're walking to school. You know, it's a lot more peaceful, but, you know, I think the state actually does need to get involved when it's necessary to actually keep order.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a tragic element to Harry in San Francisco, because it is like the way that it's put across is that what was the song called? Are You Going to San Francisco?
Yeah, from 1967. Yeah, the Scott McKenzie one.
Yeah, so you know, you had all your hippy dippy ideals, and then just 2 years later, like, the city is a crime ridden like shithole. And then, weirdly enough, you have to have like the person who has to come and clean up the mess is this like authoritarian alpha white man, and there's this like tragic element to it, because you just know that if Harry like had his way, like, he'd probably prefer to be out in like. Where Idaho or somewhere in some small town. If his ideals and his sort of moral compass and all of this, like, if that was implemented in San Francisco, it would look completely different. So you've got this where you have to have that, you've got this creeping, because of the left and nuttiness and stupidity of their ideas, you've got this kind of entropy which comes sneaking in. And it seems to almost beg for an authoritarian figure just to try and stop the chaos and the anarchy increasing further. And so you see this more and more reflected in the real world. I mean, to a degree, Trump was that. It was there where people are crying out for somebody to come in and just say, well, can you somebody just come along and stop the madness? Like, it's not really about being an ideologue or having this perfectly crafted worldview or whatever, but it is about just saying, please God, can somebody put an end to this madness?
Yeah, and the problem also is that men like Harry are a dying breed in San Francisco as early as the 1970s. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find anyone, of course, you know, a movie character, but you'd be hard pressed to find any of the, you know, masculine white men in San Francisco today. I mean, the average man in San Francisco today is probably some gay bug man who writes for Vice.com or something like that and buys a bunch of those Marvel products or Star Wars crap and drinks lattes at Starbucks or something like that. You know, it's a system that cannot reproduce the very thing that it needs in order to fix its own fundamental problems.
I mean, I was out walking the dog the other day, and something had happened. I don't know what, but I just saw like a ton, like about five police cars went screaming past, all like full sirens blaring. And I mean, you know, because I've got my own authoritarian tendencies, and when I was a youngster, I would always be impressed by that. I'd be impressed by it because they, you know, everybody's like all of the other cars are going up onto the side of the road to let them past. Everybody's like thinking, what the hell is it? And what it is, what you're seeing is like this sort of manifestation of state power. And so something is happening somewhere, and they're driving at high speed through like highly built up areas. They've got the sirens blaring. Everybody gets out of the road because the state is about to enforce the law. And I thought, it was really kind of on top as well. It looked really dramatic. I thought, what the hell? It's like, is there a terrorist attack in Northumberland or something? But then it kind of dawned on me, and I thought, you know what it is? Like, this is like a meme where, like, somebody's insulted a trans person on Twitter. Like, is that where they're going to? Are they going to, like, some bullshit that because somebody isn't wearing a mask and they're in a shop or something like this? And so what's happened is that that reification, that mystical aspect to the force of the state, what all of the postmodern politically correct mumbo jumbo has done has demystified the police as being an organ of the state. And instead, again, you're talking about the Bobby on the beat in the old days, you would have respect for him, and you would have respect for him as an officer and as being an organ of the state. But what you have now is where basically you don't respect them, you just know that they're powerful. It's not, you don't have that mystical aspect anymore, you just have to watch it because it's just raw power. That's all it comes down to, because the craziness of all the ideas have like sapped away at the deeper aspects to it. And so instead of saying, oh, this is great to see the state, like the state power I'm taken care of, like these guys know what they're doing, instead what you have is basically what you see is being a bunch of thugs, and you just got to stay out of the way because they can do things to you.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with the collapse of social trust. Like I remember I heard on Orwell and Goodstream when he was still on YouTube, what they were talking about was how the average citizen in the United States had zero trust in the government anymore. And, you know, I think that does a lot of damage to both, like you were mentioning, the respectable imagery of the police officer. And it has a lot, when I think of a lot of the problems today, the lack of social trust just makes everything so much worse. Like you were saying, you're half expecting these police officers roaring down the street to be going after somebody who said something mean on Twitter or something like that. In an ideal society, you'd want the police to be someone who's respected, and you would want, but in order for them to actually have that, they need to actually embody something that's worth respecting. So, you know, you actually would need police officers to actually act like men that are worthy of that authority again. You know, not a bunch of people like dancing in these LGBT pride parades. So, you know, it's just such a strange situation we're in today. Like everything is just so feminized, including the police. But then the state power just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and more willing to crack down on people for the most minor violations, because just because there is it's because of these very fundamental problems, really.
Yep. So I think I'll wrap it up. There's a couple of super chats come in there, unless you've got any more points on Dirty Harry.
No, I think I went through all my notes. I think we did the film justice.
Yeah. 3022 says, lovely chats, lads, for a tenner. Thanks a lot. And President-elect Zavid Tenek, is Australian dollars, $10, I think it is. So thanks for listening, folks. Have you got any ideas about what we're doing next month?
I'm thinking maybe Dr. Zhivago might be a good pick.
All right, great.
Bolshevik. Another David Lean one.
Bolshevik Revolution. Yeah. I'm happy it's on your channel. So thanks for tuning in, folks. I do like these kind of cozy streams. I think it's nice. So a bit low key, a bit laid back. It's nice that we can go off on tangents and things. So right, I'll leave it there. I'm sorry about the funny on at the start. I'm gonna get better for next time, I promise. So I'll catch you later, folks.